AT&T Broadcast Studios, this is ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
Welcome into ABQ Connect, ladies and gentlemen. Two of the smartest people that I know in studio with me this afternoon, Ray Mondragon and Dr. Linda Wonka. They are here to talk to us a little bit about creation science. And you know, here on the program, we've had Ray on very frequently. We love to talk about how science and things that are evident in science can help to, increase our faith and support our faith. And Linda, I just met you, and I told you we try to encourage our listeners that they have not left their brains at the door when they said Jesus is Lord. So thank you for being here.
Well, it's good to be here.
I'm going to let you, Ray, introduce Dr. Linda. She's got quite impressive credentials, and I think our listeners are going to be excited to hear what she has to say today.
Well, just like you said, one of the things that we want your audience to know is there's people right around us in our community that are believers. Linda believes in the inspiration and inerrancy of Scripture, just like we've kind of drilled several times, and also is a thinker and has a PhD and has raised a family. So she's just an ordinary woman that has some background and primarily biochemistry is her specialty and her majors, and she's done some work since then and homeschools and is involved in the homeschool movement. And I just wanted your audience to be exposed to people right around us in Albuquerque that also kind of believe the same way that we have been talking about over the air here.
Right. Linda, I just met you, but you have a heart to teach young people.
Yes.
And you shared that with me. So tell us a little bit, as people listen to this program today, you work with a lot of people that have homeschool their children, so you're providing some resources and things for them. You've got a chemistry class coming up, and tell us how people can get in touch with you if they're interested in working with you.
Yes, I homeschooled my own three children, and my last child graduated last year, and I also founded Albuquerque area homeschooler science Olympiad teams, mid school and high school. Been involved with that for 16 years.
Nice.
And we've won our state competitions.
So you started when you were about 15.
Yeah. Right. And then when my children got older, I began teaching science for other homeschoolers as well. So I teach high school biology and chemistry just out of my home, from a creationist point of view, particularly in biology. Next year I'm definitely teaching biology, and I'm recruiting for next year. If you're interested, I am on Facebook under Linda Brannon Walkup, and I'm enrolling limited. We will be meeting in person and hopefully get through the year in person, but could use a few more students. So if you're interested, you can contact me, or also at linda@walkupsrule.net is my email. But yes, I enjoy teaching young people.
Now, well, I'm excited to have you on the program today, and we've had a series, and I want to remind all of our listeners, Ray has taken us through basic comparisons between evolution and creation science. And what we determined in the series that we went through when we were talking about those two basic concepts and perspectives is that the so-called theory of evolution really has never elevated to science. It's something that's taught, though.
It's a philosophy.
Yeah, it's philosophy.
In fact, it's a religion.
Well, I was just watching the news, and I'm not going to name the news station because I don't want to put anybody on the spot, but the person that was actually reading this report said, oh, no, there's some new evidence from such and such a telescope that after the Big Bang Theory, this and this happened. And I'm just thinking all the time, what are you talking about? Do you have any basis for anything that you're saying, or are you just parroting things that you've been told? And I want our listeners to know that God created this world, and he's revealed himself through his creation, and this is really true, and there's all kinds of scientific evidence to back it up. So, Ray, we have been talking about the worldwide flood, and the last time we got together, we talked a little bit about how the fossil record supports the fact that there was a worldwide flood. Kind of review that for us quickly, if you would.
Well, that was our starting point in terms of the scientific evidence, and there's lots of evidence. In fact, we've stated that the secular scientist that is unaware of a new way of looking at the same data. I've been stressing we look at the same data. We don't introduce anything different other than what's in the rocks. And when they look at the rocks, they see billions of years or millions and millions adding up to billions. And they don't see, according to them, any evidence of a worldwide flood. Maybe several smaller local floods, but no worldwide flood. And by looking at the same data from a different perspective, we as creationists interpret the data in a way that we see overwhelming evidence of a Genesis flood. And I started last time by giving some of that, and we got through a little bit of fossil evidence. And one of the main things that I mentioned was just the existence of fossils themselves all over the world. In fact, this is how they identify each layer is based on what particular, they will call them index fossils.
Well, they call that the geologic column.
Correct.
And each one of the layers is named after the fossils found in each layer.
Or I'm not exactly sure where the name comes from, but they are identified depending on some key fossils that are within them. So there's fossils throughout the geological record down to the Precambrian layer.
Well, but I want to remind our listeners of, I always internalize one or two things because I don't think I'm smart enough to learn everything in one sitting. That's why I want everybody to remind everybody that we have just launched a new Facebook page for ABQ Connect. So when you want to follow up on this interview, you can get links to the podcast and everything at abqconnect.online. But we now have Facebook/ABQ Connect. And we're going to have all kinds of information periodically released through the Facebook page so that people can kind of take what we're talking about today in an hour program in smaller doses. And so we're really conscious of trying to do this. But here's one of the things I internalized from the last two times we were together. You talked about a polystrate fossil, which 90% of the time is a tree, right? And that tree goes up and down, just like it normally would, vertically, through several layers of the geologic column. So if each one of those layers took billions of years to lay down,
Millions.
Well, name it. I mean, if it took 100 years,
that's unusual.
Okay. Right. The wood would rot and be gone. It would turn to powder before it was encapsulated in one of the layers, right?
Fossilized, correct.
So
correct.
Evidence of polystrate fossils says that the layers in the geologic column were probably laid down based on some catastrophic event, I think is what you said.
Right.
And so the entire tree, or a large portion of it, through several layers, was encapsulized.
Right.
And that's evidence that there was a catastrophic event. We're saying it's the Genesis flood.
Right. And we say that because we see that phenomenon. That's not an anomaly. In other words, that's not something that is just isolated and only in a couple of places that may have some other explanation. But we find that all over the world. Mm. So it's worldwide evidence. Just like the very existence of fossils, we find fossils in every layer from the Precambrian up all over the world. Mm. And we said just the existence, because it requires catastrophic conditions to produce or to preserve a fossil creature. And if you have catastrophic circumstances, then we're talking about a worldwide circumstance in every one of these layers at every point in the geological column. So that argues for a different interpretation than the explanation that the evolutionist gives. And they don't have a good explanation for the formation of the abundance of so many fossils.
Okay, well, I don't want everybody to hang on to this, because what we're going to do today is we're going to talk about, again, the major conflicts between historical geology and believing in a Genesis flood. But now I want to switch over to Linda for a second. So, Linda, tell me what your primary interest is and your primary area of study.
So my interest is in the molecular DNA data, because actually, as far as the evolutionary theory goes, it is now being proved out, as it were, or what they look for evidence now is in genomes, comparing genomes between peoples, between organisms, and trying to see how they evolved over time. So they've kind of gone away from strict paleontology, which of course gives you less data. Now they're going toward interpreting what we see, say in the human genome, as having been assembled and evolved through time from lower animals. And since we've developed these fast sequencing techniques and we have these huge accessible databases, you know, anybody can come in and compare genomes and say, why is this the same? How is it different? And we're discovering so much. And having grown up with a certain point of view of what the human genome was when I was in school and how it has really changed, even in the last 10 years, radically, our understanding of how it works and how it's much more complex than we realized, I feel like that reinforces the creationist point of view that we're not full of junk DNA, we're not full of evolutionary remnants, we're full of things that is important and that is very complex in design that we're just beginning to understand.
In fact, I've been saying all along when we were talking about creation versus evolution, and Linda may want to comment on it, that one of the fields of science is this micro area, microbiology, biochemistry, genetics. These sciences that are relatively recent are really doing far more to undermine the philosophy of evolution than probably any other science. Do you have anything to add to that, Linda?
Definitely. So this concept, and it's still not dead, but of junk DNA, that a lot of our, you may have heard this, a lot of our genome doesn't do anything. It's just kind of left over. It's stuck onto us from our evolutionary journey to become a person. And increasingly, even just secular research has found that that lots of our genome is important. And we're understanding, it's like in 2012, the ENCODE project was a big project looking at all parts of the genome and what parts are active. And they found that 80% of it is active, where you may have been told that only like 1% or 2% of it does anything. And so this directly contradicted, and many evolutionary scientists rather disturbed by that assumption of usefulness of the human genome. But if you were a creationist, you'd say, well, of course it has a function.
Now, I've described this phenomenon in terms of the micro level as just an updated version of an old argument that the evolutionists have used called
the vestigial organs.
Vestigial organs, yeah. My mind went blank there for a minute.
Okay.
But you probably heard the argument of vestigial organs, where some of the organs are just left over from prior evolutionary stages. This is just an updated...
I mean, this would be something like your
idea.
Appendix.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's right. No longer useful, and they're arguing that that's evidence for evolution.
Exactly. And now they've moved the argument, since the discussion is at this level, to that area, and that's what she's describing.
But what I hear you saying, Linda, is that the complexity of the DNA molecule and now the science that's available, computing and everything else that's available, is actually discrediting what a lot of evolutionists have said, that most of the DNA molecule, I think you used 80%, is actually useful and active and interactive with the creation of our bodies and everything else. So yeah, I'm not sure I can wrap my mind all around a DNA molecule, but it's fascinating to know how long and how huge it is, but you can't see it with the naked eye. And this all speaks to me, guys, of a designer. This doesn't speak of a cosmic accident that began in the primordial ooze some billion years ago. So, wow, good stuff. We're going to be back. We've got Dr. Linda Walk up in studio and Ray Mondragon. They are both creation scientists. We'll be right back on ABQ Connect. Stay with us.
Gonset Physical Medicine specializes in the diagnosis and treatment of spinal ligament injury. Don't ignore the pain and discomfort any longer. Schedule a consultation today at gonstead-nm.com or 505-884-8584.
Here's Mike Fabares, Bible teacher on Focal Point.
You know, when we're in a dark season of personal pain, it is easy to begin questioning God's goodness. Man, I know that. That may be a natural response to our discomfort, but it certainly isn't the right one. Instead, in Psalm 107, we read that those who are hurting should purposefully quote, here it is, give thanks to the Lord for he is good. God's goodness, the psalmist reminds us, can be seen in the ways he's delivered us from previous bouts with trouble and pain. And of course, the greatest example of his goodness is our eternal redemption from sin in Christ. You may be in a dark season, but remember that God is good. Whether your suffering is the result of some unfortunate circumstance or some poor decision of yours, know that God is gracious and he can deliver.
Right thinking leads to right living. Want more? Power up with Pastor Mike Fabares on Focal Point, a half hour of hard-hitting Bible teaching here on your station. Or check it out online at focalpointradio.org.
Hello, this is Chaplain Jim Meyer from High Desert Hospice. I want you to know that we're praying for you and to remind you that you're not alone. In times of crisis and uncertainty, it's important to cling to that which we know, that we're cared for and deeply loved by God. David had this confidence when he wrote in Psalm 28, verse 7, "The Lord is my strength and my shield. My heart trusts in him, and I am helped." So from our family at High Desert Hospice to yours, be encouraged.
King David, a man after God's own heart. He's the only person in Scripture called that. Listen to Skip Heitzig.
It mystifies us, really, because we know David. We've read the rest of the story. A man after God's own heart committed adultery with Bathsheba, got her husband drunk, killed him off.
The reason for this title shows us an important thing about God.
Don't think that that means perfect, because it wasn't. He had flaws. Another translation puts it this way, a man after God's own mind.
Find more from Skip at connectwithskip.com.
It's as if God is saying, I don't see David in his sin. I know his sin. But I'm seeing David with the potential for David to be something other than that. A man after my heart, my mind.
Subscribe to the Skip Heitzig YouTube channel.
Just think what God can do through you, no matter what your past is. What God can do through you.
God can do through you.
A man or woman sold out to God.
On KNKT, this is ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
Dr. Linda Walker and Ray Mondragon, a frequent contributor to our program with Creation Science Fellowship. Ray also teaches with Chafer Seminary. He's done some work in the Calvary School of Ministry and been around here a long time. Ray, 15 times you've been on the show.
This is number 15. That's right.
We're going to have to start writing you some big checks, aren't we?
Yeah. I haven't received one yet.
Or we're going to have to do something to help you keep that bike of yours in shape, because you're biking all over Albuquerque.
Well, I've never taken money for ministry, so we're not going to start today.
Well, the Lord's blessed you, man, that you don't have to do that, that you've been made yourself available and you're really interested in this. And your friend, Dr. Linda Walkup, is in studio, and we're going to talk a little bit in this section about rocks, but I want all our listeners to know that pretty much the whole second half of our program today, Linda's going to be taking us to the subject of dinosaurs and DNA, and I think that's a fascinating subject for people that are Christians, because you've heard 80 million different versions about, you know, when did the dinosaurs exist, and did they exist, and et cetera, et cetera. So, Ray, go ahead.
That's a major area of this whole discussion on fossils, is these dinosaurs. Because according to the evolutionist, dinosaurs lived 65 million years ago, went extinct as a result of a meteor or a comet or something striking the Yucatan area. And that's what caused the extinction. That's their viewpoint. Now, obviously, we would have a different viewpoint in terms of the Genesis flood, but that's a whole fossil area that is very, not only interesting, particularly kids love fossils, and there's some exciting evidence that has been studied for, what is it now, 10 years or so? About 10 years, where this evidence basically says that 65 million years is impossible.
What I like about the approach that you two have is that you are both academically trained. You've been through secular universities and secular science programs, and you've maintained your faith, or you've come to faith, even knowing all that you know.
We've strengthened our faith.
Well, and that's an amazing thing, because you're able to think through the whole process. You know, there's not a lot of people at the university level that will even be hired, because universities, if you have a bias toward creation science, they won't hire you.
Mm-hmm.
A friend of mine, Mark Mathis, his wife Diane used to be an anchor at Channel 7 for many years. I think they now live in Florida, but Mark did an entire documentary on the fact that if you were a creation scientist, you could not be hired with a university. Linda, did you want to comment on that? Were you familiar with that work?
Oh, yes. I did see that movie. That was excellent presentation. And it is a problem, especially, I would say, in biology. Biologists are the most committed to evolution being part of how their paradigm, how they look at everything. And that's true at most, even at Christian University. My daughter's at a Christian university, but they have a little evolution statement in their biology department. A lot of times it's the engineers and the physicists that are more open to perhaps other interpretations. The biologists are really kind of dedicated to that point of view. And as I'm going to talk about this one scientist, I mean, she, because of her revolutionary findings, she was very reluctant to publish them, and she was trying to cover herself, and she's been, and she's not, she's a Christian, but she's not, she is an evolutionist.
Was that Schweitzer?
Yeah. So yeah. Mary Schweitzer, because she knew it could be her job if she looked to be promoting creation science in any way. So that is definitely a problem, is that you cannot get hired. I'm a member of an online discussion group, and some of the members are going under the radar, and they're, because they're only graduate students or postdocs. And if they were known to be looking at things from a creation science point of view, they might lose their jobs or lose their ability to finish their degrees. And so they try to just be low key and stay under the radar until they get into a more established position.
Would it be accurate for me to say, from a philosophical standpoint, that if you're a Christian, you're willing to look at all options in science?
Yeah.
But
we want to expand the possibilities, open your mind to the reality.
I kind of know the answer to the question, because we believe, you know, God's given us everything and is the creator of all.
Right.
But in some ways, you're actually open to something in science proving that God doesn't exist, if you're willing to look at everything.
We want to look at the evidence.
But here's the funny thing. When you are an evolutionist, you're not open. You're mm-hmm. automatically right. saying anything that has to do with God cannot be.
You're committed to the religion of naturalism if you are a secular evolutionist. You don't know it. Most scientists are not aware that they are committed to a worldview, a philosophy, an idea. We have a different worldview. We believe that there is a God, and that there's a realm outside of the natural realm, and that God has revealed himself and given us an abundance of data to help us interpret the physical realm. Mm. So we're open to more data. And like you say, the evolutionist is limited to that can be explained by natural means. And that's a whole philosophical approach that's different. That's the basic difference between our worldview and that of the secular scientist.
Ray, take us a little bit through the rocks. We've got a few more minutes. We can talk about rocks and fossils.
Sure.
Review for us what is in the fossil record that supports a worldwide flood.
I gave you three things last time. We didn't have too much time to expand the last one, but I mentioned already the existence of fossils. I challenged your listeners to think about what happens to creatures when they die today. Do they fossilize? And we said that they were very, very rare. Mm-hmm. It took unusual circumstances, catastrophic circumstances, to produce a fossil. And the fact that they're worldwide means that there has to be some worldwide catastrophe. Secondly, we looked at...
Ray, let me ask you a question quick. Because you did mention where fossils could possibly be forming now or in the last few years, and that would be like at Mount St. Helens.
Or catastrophic situations like that.
Yeah.
Right.
But again, that's everywhere in the world.
That's right.
Not happening.
That's isolated.
But yet you find fossils
everywhere
in the world in the geological column.
And you like to point out that on Sandia Crest,
yes,
that's a Pennsylvanian layer up there on Sandia Crest. And yes, it's got its characteristic fossils in it. So on tops of mountains and valleys, everywhere in the world, you'll find fossils. How did they come about? You had to have catastrophic conditions.
So is our world now just so much calmer that it's different than it was billions of years ago? So back in those days, they were forming a lot of fossils, and now they don't?
Well, the evolutionist would say we have these long periods of time. So over long periods of time, you know, we're just talking about 60, 70 years here, our lifetime, which is nothing in terms of geological secular time. Mm-hmm. Nice. So the second area, you want me to move on?
Yes, please do.
There's also a phenomenon of the accumulation of fossils in isolated locations that are analyzed to be unnatural, you might say. In other words, we call them fossil graveyards, where it appears that large numbers of creatures were swept away, isolated in a location, and then covered with catastrophic conditions and fossilized, fossil graveyards. And again, that's not an anomaly. That is something that you can see, and I gave you examples from different regions all over the world, France, Germany, several in the U.S., California. In a smaller scale here, even in New Mexico, there are some dinosaur fossil graveyards, but they're worldwide. And then we talked about that interesting phenomenon, and I wish I could show photographs, because you can see what we call polystrate fossils. That was the third major area. Fossils that go through several layers, or at least multiple layers, if not several. And again, that's worldwide as well. And the only way that could be explained, the evolutionist doesn't have an explanation for
that. Here's the funny thing. I just looked at some posts on a patio made out of a tree, you know, vigas, latillas, all those kind of things in New Mexico-style construction are used. And if you put enough water on them and you have enough of the great New Mexican sun on them, they will dry rot in 30 years.
Right.
I know, because I just helped a friend of mine take some of them out. So think about this, listeners, as you're thinking about the evidence that a polystrate fossil has to encourage your faith. When you read Genesis 3 through 6 about the Genesis flood, a catastrophic event happened, encapsulated these trees. They're found all over the world, and they go through multiple layers. Had that not all happened at one time, parts of those trees would have been rotted and gone.
Or you'd see different thickness of the tree, and it's kind of the what you would expect of a tree.
Yeah, pretty consistent.
That would be encapsulated.
From top to bottom,
right. An interesting thing also, and we'll talk some more about this. I'd like to discuss Mount St. Helens in a future interview that we have. But the same phenomenon has been uncovered at Mount St. Helens. There's what's called Spirit Lake, that some of the mud flows covered some of the lower areas. And there are some polystrate, maybe not fossils yet, but polystrate phenomenon. In other words, various layers where trees are standing upright through them, much like what you can observe in some of these polystrate fossil fields.
I love it. Ray, we're going to take a break. Before we do that, tell us what we're going to do the rest of the show.
Well, I think most of the time we're going to talk to Linda, and she's got some exciting, what we might say, fossil or partially fossiled dinosaur evidence that argues for a relatively young Earth and also for a worldwide Genesis flood.
Awesome. We'll be back with Linda Walkup, Dr. Linda Walkup, and Ray Mondragon. Stay with us on ABQ Connect.
Are you having a craving for authentic and delicious New Mexican cuisine? Sadie's On Academy is offering phone-in, curbside pickup, and online ordering with menu items like their shredded beef brisket tacos, Brian's carne adobada ribs, sopapilla sliders, and more. Don't forget to pick up their famous Sadie's Chips and Salsa, located at 5400 Academy Road Northeast. Orders can be placed at 505-821-3388. That's 505-821-3388.
The greatest need in America at this hour is a great spiritual awakening. Billy Graham talking about the power of media to share the gospel.
What a glorious opportunity it is to have at our command such instruments to minister to the moral and spiritual needs of a nation and of a world that is crying for what we can deliver.
In his 7 decades of ministry, Billy Graham used TV, print, radio, internet, and other media to tell people about Jesus Christ.
We have the message. We have the ideal tool, broadcasting, to restore the meaning and purpose of life and to bring millions to a commitment to the one who said, I am the way, the truth, and the life.
Are you sharing your faith? You don't need a cable channel or a radio station to do it. Learn how at findpeacewithgod.net. That's findpeacewithgod.net. We're the Billy Graham Evangelistic Association.
I'm Rob Sneed, General Manager at Power Forward. With the events surrounding COVID-19, I'm reminded of the power of commitment made by our first responders. The sacrifice they make is both humbling and inspiring. And to say thank you, Power Forward is offering a $1,000 discount to first responders and medical professionals. Plus, every new vehicle comes with the confidence of a 100,000-mile warranty, complimentary maintenance, and roadside assistance. Find your ride at mypowerford.com or come see us. We're on the affordable side of Albuquerque, on Montaño, west of I-25.
Since the Bible is the Word of God, since it does reveal the character of God, since it alone describes salvation and eternal life, since all these things are true of God's Word, how important is it to know what every word of Scripture means? Hi friends, John MacArthur here. There's only one way to tap into the power of Scripture, and that's by immersing yourself in it regularly. Every day on Grace to You, we unpack the Bible verse by verse, precept upon precept, and there's no better way to spend 30 minutes of your day. So join us here on this station for Grace to You.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on KNKT. You're listening to KNKT. Welcome back to ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
Mr. Ray Mondragon with Creation Science Fellowship in studio, and he's brought along a good friend of his, Dr. Linda Walkup. She is a molecular biologist, which I don't even know what that is, Linda. You better tell me what that is.
So it's more concerned with the molecules inside a cell. So DNA, which is the hereditary molecule, and RNA, which carries the information to the rest of the cell. And then protein is kind of the workhorse of the cell, but makes up all the activities of the cell. So we're focusing on how those interact.
So you are a detail-oriented person, aren't you?
Mostly.
You got to get down to breaking down all of this stuff. So, Ray, I promised everybody we were going to talk a little bit about dinosaurs. Tell me where we're going.
Well, there's exciting evidence that has been, like I said, recently discovered. You would expect, or the evolutionist tells us, that dinosaurs went extinct and they lived 65 million years ago, and they have their theory as to their extinction. But the evidence that has been found recently is we have found dinosaur remains within, obviously, the encrusted rock parts of it, actually soft tissue, blood cells even, and DNA even. And
okay, this is sounding like Jurassic Park.
Yeah, almost. And Linda has done a lot of research in this area and has a lot of information concerning that research. So either dinosaurs didn't live 65 million years ago, and or, which creationists would believe, the earth is relatively young and these specimens are relatively young.
Yeah.
So that's the kind of the issue at stake here.
So Linda, what is the conflict between secular science and their view of dinosaurs and a creation scientist view of dinosaurs?
So creation scientists would take a Genesis seriously, and when it says, you know, God created these animals on these days, and that man was there to be the caretaker of them. Now we know that it's often quoted figure with 99.9% of all species that ever lived are extinct at this point, and most of them were before man supposedly arrived on the scene, you know, modern man 300,000 years ago or whatever. So it kind of takes away our caretaker role, and most of them, you know, no dinosaurs, all those are gone. dead and buried before we even get there, if you want to take that point of view. But if you want to think of it as that all the animals were created and they were created with a certain genetic potential, maybe to differentiate and speciate within certain boundaries and fill the earth. And then also the flood, if you're a geneticist, you say, well, a flood, if you're going to kill all the animals around the earth, all the people except for eight, and just two of every land-dwelling animal, that's a real genetic bottleneck right there. So what are the consequences of that? Can we see that in the genetics, the fact that we've cut down the number of animals severely, except for in the ocean? Can we see effects of that? Can we see rapid speciation after the flood? So we look for signs of, and once, you know, a compressed time period in which can we see that happening today? When we look at speciation, can we see that as means something that's expressed from natural variations that was built into the genomes and then is expressed through time? So that's kind of a different way to look at it, rather than taking millions and millions of years for something to evolve flight, that it was something that God made from the beginning and then just differentiated, say, among birds and among bats and so on.
What evidence are you looking at now? What is this new research, new evidence that you've kind of looked at to support the evidence of kind of a biblical creation science view?
So some of it is not super new, but it's been accumulating, and it just gets more and more exciting. So in 2005, and I remember when this came out, so Dr. Mary Higby Schweitzer is an American paleontologist. She actually got her PhD under James Horner, who is one of the very famous paleontologists at Montana State University. And she's now at North Carolina State University. And a little before then, she was given, there was a Tyrannosaurus Rex that was excavated from the Hell's Creek Formation in the Badlands of Montana. And when they're transporting, I believe it was a thigh bone, it kind of broke in half and there were some pieces came off. And he said, well, why don't you take those and you can do some analysis on them. And so she was looking at them.
And by the way, that Montana, that's a fossil graveyard.
Oh, yes.
Right.
Tons of dinosaurs available there to look at. So she looked at it and she saw, because dinosaurs are supposed to be, actually birds are dinosaurs now is the current thinking. But you know, birds have to build up some calcium before they go through their egg-laying phase. And so she says, I think if I look inside the fossil a little bit, I can maybe see a similar thing happening with dinosaurs. And so she told her technician, here, put it in this mild acid. We're going to dissolve away some of the calcium. So normally you don't destroy dinosaur fossils because they're limited and special. But it was just a little piece. So she did. And the technician let it in a little too long. And so essentially dissolved away about everything, all the calcium and the other mineral buildup. And she said, I don't know what happened. And she took, and it was like limp, but there was something there. So they didn't expect. So it was dated to 68 million years ago, Tyrannosaurus Rex. They didn't expect if you dissolved away the fossilized parts, there'd be anything left because all the organic material has been replaced. It's gone. But there was this organic matrix that was left there. And they looked and it was like elastic. It was squishy. And I go, could this really be? You know, and her quote is, I was scared to death. I had goosebumps. This isn't real. This can't happen. This cannot be. There's no way that tissue can last 68 million years outside. And of course, certainly for the last hundreds, thousands, millions of years, it's been out in a desert freezing and thawing. How could it survive? And so they took other pieces. They redid it 17 times, you know, and they started examining it under a microscope in different ways and going, wow, this looks like blood vessels. It looks like it has cells inside of it. So she finally reported it, and probably there was a lot of back and forth on this. So this was in Science Magazine, which is one of the major journals, saying we found the soft, stretchy tissue. It looks like actual something from the dinosaur. So inside, and particularly tyrannosaurs, they have hollow bones. I mean, we all have bone marrow inside, but particularly they have pretty hollow bones full of tissue and what you expect to see, and things that look like blood cells. And the blood cells look like reptiles and but not birds, but they have nucleated blood cells. You see something dark inside that looks like a nucleus. And so she put that out there, and immediately there was a kind of an uproar.
Can't be. You're faking the data, right?
Right. So they said, I think it's a biofilm. It's something accumulated on there. It's like bacteria or something. You're just looking at some goop that was in there, and you rehydrated it. And
you contaminated it.
Right. So that was the immediate reaction. And so she very systematically trying to address all the issues that people brought up. So she says, or is this a fluke thing? So she got out another dinosaur. Brachiocephalosaurus is one. Did the same thing, dissolved it, looked, had the same network of, looked like blood vessels. And then they looked closely, used some scanning electron microscopy, looked really close and go, that looks like an osteocyte. So that the cells that make bone has a certain, morphology to them, and it looked exactly like it. And so then she began to compare. So what happens if I do this like to ostrich or emu bone and treat it the same way, look under the microscope, do I see the same things that I see? And she did that and compared them. There's other papers in 2007, 2009, you see, you go, wow, they look exactly the same. It looks exactly what you would expect to see. And then she also did things with antibodies against known proteins. So we don't know for sure how dinosaurs are, but we can guess. We expect it to be similar to reptiles. We guess to be less similar to mammals or whatever. So they took antibodies against, and they could get them antibodies to light up against collagen, which is one of the major proteins that you find in bones. So she's done a lot of work and comparisons over the years. And then other people said, hey, I need to look inside my dinosaur bones, because did anyone look? No, because it wasn't supposed to be there.
Yeah.
And they also began finding very similar structures and isolating proteins. And now, and just recently, and this year, comes out with a duck-billed nestling that she was looking at. It looked like exactly, found some cells, looked like they were in the process of dividing. You could see the dark material look like DNA dividing on either side.
So this sounds like it's a more recent structure, that it's not something that they anticipated they would ever see from an organism that they said was 65 million years old.
Exactly. In fact, you might comment on what do biochemists and others that look at all this, what do they say is the outside time frame that these structures can survive? In other words, certainly not 65 million, 68
no.
million years.
No. So DNA is more easily degraded. So DNA has sort of an upper limit. People usually say 500,000 years, maybe. Proteins are a little tougher, especially these kind of proteins.
And these are secularists. I mean, this is within the biological. Said. Yeah.
And protein, maybe 1 million or so. It gets degraded, and sometimes you can still detect little pieces from it. And even in this paper that came out this year, there was a article about around it, and it's still not accepted generally that proteins or even proteins can last beyond 500,000 years. Mm. It keeps saying it. And then I was watching a video of her on YouTube where she's talking about, says, well, what convinced the people it was real? He says, well, a lot of them are still not convinced because it just does not fit in with that time frame. And actually she does not believe that means it's younger. And I don't want to misrepresent her. And she's not actually happy that creations take her data and look at it a different way. But I think it's a very valid way to look at it. It's like, well, maybe we ought to think about the fact that perhaps it's younger.
What I like is that we're having the conversations. You're bringing to light some maybe common knowledge in the scientific world, but to most of us, we haven't heard this. So I'm very encouraged to hear about it, have our
listeners
know about
it. And you won't hear about it except for formats like this one here. You won't hear this out in the public.
But I want to be able to go to somebody that might come to one of my children or one of my friend's children and say, oh, you Christians, put that aside. That's what you believed growing up here on this university campus. you'll find that none of that is really true and this and that. And with mm-hmm. this kind of information, with this, they can ask very simple questions. And I'm just telling you, this kind of information God will use to encourage their faith. And so I'm just blessed you guys are here. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about the human genome, and we'll be back with more. Dr. Linda Walkup with us, and Ray Mondragon, creation scientist, and we'll have a lot more from them here in our final segment. We'll be right back.
Do you have an old clunker or a good running vehicle? Donate to Joy Junction. It can help bring hope to the homeless. If it's in good condition, great. If not, no problem. Running not required. We'll take it. Just contact us and we'll take care of the rest, even towing. Just call 505-217-9586. Your vehicle donation will help us provide housing for Albuquerque's homeless families. Joy Junction, bringing hope to the homeless. Won't you help? Here's Joy Junction CEO, Elma Reynolds.
Joy Junction has been serving homeless families, men and women, for more than 33 years now. And it's a dream come true for our late founder, Jeremy Reynolds, to have a new additional space to give more dignity and privacy to those who come to our doors. But we need your help. Your generous donation means hope to somebody, and we are here to be that hope.
For more information, go to joyjunction.org. Be that hope. Go to joyjunction.org.
A Harvest America Moment with Pastor Greg Laurie.
Jesus is looking for spiritual fruit in your life. I was at the market the other day. All my favorite fruit is out. I love peaches. I love nectarines. I love plums. I love cherries. And I love watermelon. So Jesus is looking for fruit too. Hey, is there fruit in your life? You say, well, what do you mean by that? Number one, when I praise and thank God, that is a form of spiritual fruit. Another form of spiritual fruit is bringing people to Christ. And thirdly and lastly, giving our finances is a form of fruit. And Jesus said, herein is my Father glorified, that you bring forth much fruit.
Impact your world with the gospel by knowing God and making him known. Connect with Pastor Greg Laurie and sign up to receive his free daily devotion emails. To get started, visit harvest.org today.
Whether at home or in the workplace, we're all leaders. Become a better leader in this leadership moment with Craig Groeschel.
If you want to lead a breakout ministry, dominate an industry, change a city, help a nation, solve massive problems, or meet the needs of thousands of hurting people, you will have to learn to innovate. Let's talk about how we do it. What is innovation? Well, innovation is different from creativity. Creativity is thinking up new things, but innovation is actually doing new things. In other words, people with ideas are not necessarily innovators. People who do the ideas are the innovators. I love what Sarah Bond Brannick said. She said, the world needs dreamers and the world needs doers. But above all else, what the world needs are dreamers that do. I love that. We're going to be dreamers that actually do.
That was Craig Groeschel on a KNKT Leadership Moment. Hear more at life.church/leadership podcast.
On KNKT, this is ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
I want to remind everybody, as you're listening today, you're hearing from Ray Mondragon, Creation Science Fellowship, and Dr. Linda Walkup. She is available. She's, in fact, getting ready to teach a couple chemistry classes and some other things, does a lot of work with homeschool organizations. And you can reach her at Facebook, Linda Brannon Walkup, B-R-A-N-N-O-N, and then her last name is W-A-L-K-U-P. And you can get in touch with her via Facebook and find out about what she's doing. I'm fascinated, Linda, by what you were just telling us. And now we're going to talk about the human genome, of course. So now I know absolutely nothing about what we're going to talk about. Go ahead.
Okay, so the human genome is all the information, the sum total of the information that makes up you in each person. And it's been fun to watch in my lifetime how that information has come about. So you may recall the Human Genome Project that was started in the 90s, and it was going to take 10 years and billions of dollars. And then there was the Celera Genomics, was the competing private company, says, you know what, we can do this and faster than the government and Francis Collins. And so So the draft genome, human genome, came out in February 2001. And mostly because they were both wanting to come out with something. And they had a complete draft in 2004. And actually, I was reading about it, they still have some gaps and differences. Because initially they were looking at, you know, like one or two people's genomes. But now we are looking at millions of people's genomes, right? And now you too can get your genome sequenced for about $100. At least all the important parts. not the sum total, but the things you're most interested in. Through 23andMe or Ancestry.com. So it's really
And you told me you were related to the Neanderthals.
Yeah. So one thing that 23andMe does for you, it tells you how many Neanderthal genes or sections you have. It's like, oh.
By the way, Linda, you're allowed to whack him if you'd like to. That's okay. Well, the Human Genome Project. Now, I remember hearing about that in the news, but again, there are secular scientists that look at all that data differently than you look at it. How does that encourage you that we are the product of a creator, Linda?
Well, I know during the process, there was like, well, we're going to sequence all this stuff, but most of it isn't going to be relevant to, you know, understanding disease or how we work. Because there's only like, we only think there's only going to be like 2% that makes proteins, that actually has the information to make proteins and some to make some RNAs that we know are important. But as they did it, they realized so many things were, and through time, as we've looked at it, so many regions are important for regulation of the ones that do actually have the structural proteins and the enzymes and things you to build yourself, and that it is important. And as we compare between people, and actually I just saw in 2018, we just added 300 million base pairs out of the 3 billion. They go, oh, wait, here's some more that we didn't, that some people have and other people don't. That's important. So I think we see how DNA is also a structural molecule and that parts of it are important. They may look unimportant because they're just repetitive, the same thing repeated over and over, but they protect the ends of it. Some of them are involved in dividing the DNA. Some are for localizing in certain positions. I know I saw this paper. It was fascinating that each of your, so you have 46 chromosomes, 23 pairs, and after they divide, they actually all condense back into the nucleus in a very specific location. Certain ones are by certain others, and because they like labeled them all separately colored, and they'd always go to the same position with respect to each other, because that was important for regulating the genes that were on different pieces of DNA elsewhere.
And all this came about by random blind processes, right?
Random blind processes starting
millions of years ago.
Even a bacteria. So, I worked in bacteria studying DNA replication, and that was complicated enough with just 1,000 genes in a very small and supposedly primitive and yet incredibly complex, just understanding that. And now we have epigenetics too, which is like, it doesn't matter what the actual code is. It also matters the proteins that are bound around the DNA, whether it's expressed or not, which can be infected by the environment. So you can't even see changes sometimes by looking at the sequence and things, the way things should be expressed in different cells or in different people at different times. So it's just an incredible dance of the information and the proteins in the cell.
Well, there's a lot of information here, and I want to make sure that people know where to get additional information, because, you know, we only have a couple, three more minutes. But I want to remind everybody that Ray Mondragon's website is For His Glory. That's F-O-R-H-I-S and then glory.com.
And N-M.
Got to say that again. So right. For His Glory, N-M, for New Mexico.com. Great information there. Ray is a Bible expositor. He's got a lot of stuff about creation science. Also want to point everybody to the Creation Science Fellowship, nm.org website. That is csfnm.org. Again, bibliographies and all kinds of things available for all of this information. And I want to also now talk to you, Ray, about Creation Science Fellowship is back to meeting.
This month.
So it'll be Tuesday.
Right.
And you meet where?
Faith Bible Church on the corner of Central and Moon. And Linda's going to be one of the speakers in September. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Can you maybe tell the audience?
That's what I'm scheduled right now.
Yeah.
So I was going to present on some of the newer findings in dinosaur DNA.
More detail than what we had today.
Oh, sure.
And the proteins that have been found and how scientists have tried to explain away or how the preservation and really cannot with the techniques they have now. And I might also talk some about some of the fact we can get preserved human DNA out of Neanderthal fossils and others as well, which that is accepted.
Talk about your relatives?
Talk about my relatives from Europe and Asia, yes. So.
And I'm supposed to, it's a little tentative right now, but I'm scheduled, I think, to be the speaker in July.
Okay. Okay. And this is a free opportunity.
Right.
People can go to Creation Science Fellowship. You guys have a lot of people like yourselves that are creation scientists.
Welcome families.
Yep. Yeah. Families and
homeschoolers.
Homeschoolers. And it's once a month, third Tuesday of every month. We've, of course, had a few months off because of COVID.
Right.
But now people need to wear masks, any of those kind of things, or any of those protocols in place?
I haven't heard, but I don't think so, but okay. You might bring one just to be safe.
Yeah, and I'm sure that there's occasions where you have a big crowd, but most of the time there's plenty of space if
plenty
people
of space.
Are nervous about that.
Yeah. Right.
And boy, I'm just excited to hear about these kind of cool things. You
now,
know,
my topic in July, if it happens, people don't know it, but there are several key biblical passages that are full of science. And I'm going to take one of them that is probably the clearest passage of all of Scripture that gives a lot of insight on the second law of thermodynamics.
Mm. Well, and you've talked to us a little bit about that too, but most of what you say, Ray, when you start talking about that stuff, is flying over my head like crazy. But what we're trying to do too is we, of course, have this new Facebook page. It's Facebook/ABQConnect. .com, and we're going to have all kinds of information. We'll have links to the podcast of this interview if you want to listen to it again on our ABQ.online website. We'll have obviously links to it on our Facebook page. But we're going to take little snippets of what you've talked about today, little sound bites, and put those out there for the public to kind of listen to and hear, because I think those individual points will do a lot to encourage people in their faith. I'm just fascinated with, I obviously believe in the authenticity and the inerrancy of the Bible, but it's nice to be able to go into science. Now, Linda, I got to challenge you with one thing. So we have a guest on our program that I'm hoping to have on as soon as next week, Dr. Stephen Collins. He's been excavating the city of Sodom and made this awesome discovery here about 15 years ago. He tells me that he's varied from being an old earth guy to a young earth guy to an old earth guy.
Yeah, we need to talk to him.
Yeah, so we've got to, I want to hear the discussion. I don't want to pit you against each other.
No, we wouldn't have the heart to that.
But I want to hear the discussion because I don't understand how data is interpreted. And I want to understand the biases that both sides of the, you know, the secular side and the Christian side, what are those biases and why are they there?
Right.
You know, in some ways, it kind of reminds me of this racism discussion. You know, I listen to people that talk about race, and to me, they're not necessarily racist, but they can't see what's going on. They can't evaluate it in a way that I would think it should be evaluated. And then they might say the same thing to me, you know. Maybe I'm more sensitive to it because I've been around black athletes my entire life. I have great friends. And to be frank with you, I've had some conflicts with white people when I was with my black friends.
Yeah.
So I've stood next to them and understand some of those biases and some of those prejudices. I could never walk a mile in a black person's shoes, though. So pray that our country gets more compassionate, more sensitive, and educates like we're doing today. Educate ourselves about what's going on. Thank you, Dr. Linda Walkup and
Next
Ray
time, we want to do some more science.
Yeah.
For a worldwide flood. More science.
Sounds good.
Evidence.
We will see you tomorrow with Jennifer Bryant, Nourish Nutrition Counseling.
ABQ Connect with Jim Williams is a production of KNKT. The views expressed on ABQ Connect do not necessarily reflect the views of the staff or management of KNKT. If you missed any or part of today's show, get the free podcast at abqconnect.online.